Money makes the world go around. The world go around. That is a lyric from the musical Cabaret, but it is also the truth. Whether we need to pay our bills or buy our groceries, we use money each and every day. But what are the origins of money? And how did it come to take on such an important and outsized level of interest in our culture? Fred Kaufman is the author of a book called The Money Plot, A History of Currency's Power to Enchant, Control, and Manipulate. He's going to be appearing at a virtual event for the Toronto Public Library, and he joins us now from Long Island, New York. Hello there.
Hey, Bruce.
Does the word plot in your title refer to an element of a story or to a conspiracy?
Great question. I mean, really, what's the difference? But in fact, it's a story, because before there were markets and before there were stock markets, money was a story. It was a way that we tried to wend our way through the future to keep ourselves safe and to keep our status among others. So actually, quite literally, it's a story.
You are an English professor by background. You've become a bit of an anthropologist as I read through some of the history and the cultural influences you write about in this book. Why did you decide to write a book about money?
I had started this book about 10 years ago. Strangely enough, I had been writing about food, and I started writing about global hunger. I know none of this makes so much sense. That got me into global commodity markets based on the international price of grain. And that's when I realized that money was a fiction.
I hope you use that line at cocktail parties. It was all about the price of grain. And here is a 304-page book that came out.
Yeah, because as we know, if anybody studies futures markets and options markets, the idea of money is very different than the money we keep in our wallet. And I realized at that point that there was a deep fictionality to it. My economist friends agreed with me and said, oh yeah, everybody knows that. And I was like, everybody knows that? Well, then if it's a fiction, it should act like one. And English professors know how fiction acts.
Yeah, you tell these incredible stories about history and culture and the origin of phrases like trophy wife. You've even got a Anna Nicole Smith reference in there. Here's a phrase that you include. It's a quote from the book. Powerful men are beginning to demand trophy wives. The more money men make, the argument goes, the more self-assured they become, and the easier it is for them to think, I deserve a queen. Tell us about the trophy wife.
Well, that what you just quoted actually appeared in a Fortune magazine article from 1987. The word trophy, once again, to put the English professor hat on, comes from the word for the things that people left behind on the battlefield. So if I were fighting in a war and the other side ran away, the word trophy comes from them turning around and running away. And anything they left on the battlefield, their swords, their shields, that was your trophy. And of course, the ultimate trophy would be the wives of those you had vanquished, and they would become your concubines. And so I do spend quite a bit of time in the book talking about a rather unsettling part of the history of money, and that is the woman's body as a form of money, a form of exchange and trade. And so the history of money is not all fun and games here.
No, I think that's an understatement here. You do have a chapter titled The Soul of Money. What did you find? Does money have a soul?
Well, not being a particularly religious person myself, I do think that that also is a quote from an economist, a 19th century economist, who realized that the soul of money, or what lay inside money, was not gold, was not any substance whatsoever, that money was what he called what we call the universal equivalent. Money could be anything. Money is a shape shifter, as you pointed out earlier in the show. So in fact, the soul of money is its ability to transform and move from any incarnation to the next. And of course, this has, you know, the idea of the incarnation, this obviously is then echoed in the religious plots that we see over and over again. And in the book, I trace religion and these mythological plots and religious plots in terms of the kind of money that exists at that particular time.
What is one thing that really surprised you about the intersection of religion and money? Because I think, you know, we watch these period TV shows where you can see the actions of the church as being driven by these profit motives. There's a lot of stuff in pop culture anywhere, in television and movies, that bring that to light. What surprised you?
Well, that was exactly it. What was most shocking was this general notion that the medieval church was anti-interest rate, anti-usury, anti-money, when in fact they led the commercial revolution. They created modern money. That the Catholic Church in Europe in that thousand-year period from about 500 to 1500 created mortgages, created credit finance, and they were involved in this almost compulsive effort to hide what they were doing under all of these edicts and laws. And the thing that surprised me the most was 1250, the great Pope Innocent IV in the Lateran Council. This was a very famous Lateran Council. He declared all cardinals wear red hats, but he also declared that money, that there is a corporate fiction. In other words, that the church was itself a corporate body. And in 1250, he set the entire future of corporate law.
Really? It's fascinating stuff. Now, what light does your research into the history of money shed on the issues of present day? Income inequality, this short-term focus on profit, climate change, racism, all this stuff. What do you think we can learn from, and I'm completely asking you to oversimplify and synthesize a decade of work, but what does that say about the present times?
I think what I'm trying to do is empower people to realize that money has always been a story we tell, that other people tell to us, that we believe. And so we can then begin to understand, we can tell that story too. So that, in other words, we're looking right now at very difficult times globally in terms of economics, what's going on with COVID. And what we can see in terms of what governments can do, one of the things they can do is deliver money to us. Money as security, money as a way forward, money to keep things going, and they can create money pretty much out of nothing. And that's okay, because money has always been created out of nothing. And I think that would be the takeaway I would want.
The final section is called The End of Money. Really? Really?
Well, of course, money will probably always be with us. What I'm talking about is our notion of money today, that it's in a real process of transition, and we can see it in terms of what's going on digitally. We can see it in terms of artisanal money. We can see it also in terms of the global scam economy and phishing economy. We can see it in so many ways that money is in a moment of apocalyptic transition. That doesn't mean in the future there will not be any money, but it does mean that we are going to see a lot of changes.
True that. Fred Kaufman, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Fred Kaufman is the author of The Money Plot, A History of Currency's Power to, I love this title, Enchant, Control, and Manipulate. Search online for that event he's going to be doing with the Toronto Public Library.